This whole year, we celebrate America at 250. Specifically, what are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that on July 4th, 1776, 56 men in Philadelphia, representing 3 million people back home, decided by voice vote to approve the final wording of the Declaration of Independence. That meant they were agreeing that we as a people would become an independent nation, independent from England. And of course, if you look at the Declaration of Independence, you see that they also reference God four times. Therefore, in effect, you could say they were declaring dependence upon Almighty God at the same time. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And John Eidsmo is a wonderful guest that we enjoy having on this program. He's the author of the classic book, Christianity and the Constitution. He's a longtime law professor. He's involved with the Plymouth Rock Foundation. And he really knows his stuff, as you'll see. And John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks again for joining us.
Always appreciate that, Jerry. And I love the way you are dedicated to the principles our nation was founded on and to getting those principles before the American people.
Well, you know, John, it's sad that a large number of Americans are really not aware of basic liberties. I mean, even if people were asked just basic questions, you see the man on the street sometimes, you know, has no idea what our independence is all about. You know, well, what was the American Revolution? You know, who were we fighting against? Germany? You know, you've seen those kinds of things.
Oh, of course. And we were, in a sense. I mean, King George was, you know, his grandfather was German.
Well,
and
they didn't mean it like that.
He was able to bring over a lot of missionaries, or not missionaries, mercenaries. So he did have a lot of German support. But no, we were fighting England.
Yeah, no, that is interesting that I would use that one example. It's like, you know, okay, what was the Civil War? You know, who won the Civil War? Vietnam? You know, it's crazy. People just don't know. So why don't you comment, if you would, on a Christian perspective on the Declaration of Independence. And take your time, since I know you've written the classic book, Christianity and the Constitution, which was written 11 years later, and the Constitution not only was signed in the year of our Lord, it's also signed in the 12th year of liberty, meaning they have a direct reference in the Constitution to the Declaration of Independence.
No, exactly. I hear so many people being asked on news interviews, what is America really all about? And if they say something beyond hot dogs and fireworks, they'll usually say liberty. And that is a good answer insofar as it goes, but even that is not complete, because it certainly was not intended to be the kind of liberty that so many think of today, the liberty to take drugs or engage in illicit sex or change your sex or all kinds of stuff like that. Probably a good way to capitalize what America was about is from the second stanza of America the Beautiful, confirm thy soul and self-control, thy liberty in law. And liberty in law might be a good summary of what America's about. Liberty in law, liberty under God's law. But the question is sometimes asked, is the Declaration of Independence a Christian document? And I will say that it is consistent with Christianity. What it really is it is a statement of a political philosophy. The political philosophy is that God ordains government, that God's law is over government, and that God's law includes certain, what the Declaration calls self-evident truth. Jefferson's original wording said sacred and undeniable truths. But among those are that man is created equal, and that means that we are created in a state of equality, which is the only firm basis for equality. If you believe that we're simply the result of an evolutionary process, then there's no basis for denying that maybe some races evolved further and faster than others, that we are endowed with certain...
Wait, do you mind? Let me just interrupt you real fast. Sorry about that. But you just mentioned evolution, and I do want to say this. People always need to remember that the diabolical Holocaust of the Nazis was all about trying to perfect the master race. They started with an evolutionary premise, All have evolved. Some have evolved more than others. Let's get rid of these undesirables who are genetically undesirable. Doesn't matter what they're, who they are, what they've accomplished. If they're, if they've got Jewish blood coursing through their veins or Slavic blood or gypsies, you know, we're going to get rid of them and the world will thank us for speeding up human evolution. What a huge contrast to all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Go ahead, sir. Sorry for the lengthy interruption.
That, they can just look to a couple of other sources. One is Hunter's Civic Biology. Now, that's the textbook that was on trial in the Scopes Monkey Trial, as they call it, in Tennessee. That's the textbook that the ACLU was defending, in which one part of that textbook says that there are basically five races of man, and then they describe these various races, and they say, and finally, the most highly developed race of all, the Caucasians, represented by the people of Europe and North America. And another source you can look to would be Hitler himself in Mein Kampf, where Hitler says, if nature does not wish that superior individuals should mate with inferior individuals, she wishes even less that superior races should mate with inferior races, because in that event, the work of evolution to hundreds of thousands of years of human history would be rendered futile. That's exactly what Nazism is all about.
That is just amazing. Okay, now in contrast, again, is the Declaration of Independence. There are four references to God, so let's take our time. We'll go through, have you go through all four of them. The first one is the laws of nature and of nature's God. What is that all about?
Some say that's just an afterthought to say of nature's God, but in fact, that's almost a direct quote from Sir William Blackstone. Blackstone spoke about the revealed law, which he said is found only in the Holy Scriptures. And then he said there's also the law of nature, which is also dictated into nature by God himself, but is discoverable by human reason. And the laws of nature, meaning this law of nature that Blackstone was speaking about, and of nature is God, meaning the revealed law, that the idea that there is a higher law that is above all human law and that all human law must depend upon. And so that's the first premise. Second premise is that we are created, not evolved equal, that we are endowed by our creator with certain inalienable rights. And again, they would not be inalienable rights if they come only from the government. If government gave them, government can take them away, so they're only negotiable privileges. And I can go into detail about how a doctrine of human rights is consistent with the Bible. But then I call those the second and third references. A fourth reference is that we appeal to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. In other words, recognizing that there is a God who sees our intentions and that we appeal to him as our judge as to whether we are right in this cause. And further, that we are relying upon divine providence. They recognized that going into this war that the odds were against them, that if anybody were betting on how this battle was going to come out, they'd probably bet on Britain, the most highly trained army in the world, the best navy in the world, versus we have 13 colonial militias that are underfunded and undertrained, pretty well spirited many times, but wielding those into an army was going to be very difficult. And as far as the British Navy, the best navy in the world, we didn't even have a navy. And yet Washington has to put all this together. And so what Washington did, I mean, we say that we are appealing to divine providence and trusting in him that he will enable us to prevail in this cause. The way Washington conducted the campaign, it's what I would call a protracted conflict, by which I mean that he knew that if it was just simply our military against Britain in an all-out war, if Britain was decided to engage in an all-out war against us, that they could defeat us. But Washington instead engaged in a protracted conflict that would cause Britain to decide that this is not worth the cost in lives and property. And so we need to come to an agreement, which, of course, in the Treaty of Paris, they did.
And that Treaty of Paris begins in the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity. And John Adams and
exactly.
Ben Franklin and John Jay were among the people negotiating that Treaty of Paris, which officially ended it. So you remember during the days of the Judge Roy Moore with the Ten Commandments and all the controversy surrounding that, one of the phrases in the interviews I did with Roy Moore, he tried to say, and he did say, and I think this is an important point, is that sometimes people like him or people like you, or I suppose even people like me, get accused of promoting ceremonial deism. In other words, using God words for government, but they don't mean anything. These words meant something to the founding fathers that gave us the Declaration of Independence, didn't they?
Well, they certainly did. In fact, many gave their lives for that very cause. And the phrase ceremonial deism, I think that comes from, it may come from Justice Douglas or one of the more liberal justices on the Supreme Court. But the phrase makes no sense at all. If that's all it is, then it means nothing. It certainly isn't worth fighting for. It certainly isn't worth dying for. It's worth what we put up in order to achieve these things. It's worth that only if we recognize that this is a true conviction. Now, there are areas in which some of our founding fathers would disagree. The vast majority of them were strong professing Christians. There were a few who would be Unitarian, none that I would say were outright deists. None of the leading founding fathers, that is. Thomas Paine could be called a deist, probably. But the point of the matter is they recognized a God who is actively involved in human affairs, and that our success depended upon his favor.
Now, Thomas Jefferson later in life became more liberal in his religious thinking. Earlier, when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, by all outward appearances, he was a professing Christian. Even in 1777, a year later, he helped found, as a layman, an evangelical church called the Reverend Charles Clay, who preached gospel sermons and so forth, who was a patriot, an Anglican ordained, and also evangelical, which made the Reverend Charles Clay very rare. But this is important stuff. And so what would you say to those who say, well, when Jefferson's talking about the Creator, he's not necessarily talking about the Christian God?
Well, first of all, I'd recommend an excellent book. It's titled Doubting Thomas. But I'm trying to remember, who is the author of that book?
Well, co-author, Jerry Newcomb, but the other author is Mark Blyles.
Exactly. And that is an excellent book that puts to lie so much of this, that demonstrates that Jefferson, as you say, was a founding member of this Calvinistic Christian church in 1777. First time he expresses any doubts about the truth of Orthodox Christianity, from what I can tell, is 1787, when he says that I cannot affirm the doctrine of the Trinity because I do not understand it. Not saying he rejects it. He says I can't affirm it because I don't understand it. And then, of course, as we move into the 1800s, he moves into Unitarianism, although even then, deism. He never denies that there is a God who is actively involved in human affairs. But there is some similar things with John Adams, where Adams clearly had been an Orthodox Christian earlier in life, and in the 1800s moves a little toward Unitarianism. But as to whether or not the Declaration and the Constitution were Christian documents, the real question is not what people like Jefferson and Adams believed in 1820. The question is, what did they believe in 1776 and 1787? And at that time, very clearly, they were Orthodox Christians.
That is such a great point. By the way, you'd be happy to know that we took that book, Doubting Thomas, and made a much shorter version of it just for the America 250. We call it Thomas Jefferson and the God Who Gave Us Liberty. And in fact, maybe we can close on this quote. Explain to us Jefferson's thinking here when he says, the God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time. And can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are the gift of God? John Eichmo, we have 20 seconds to go. Go ahead, sir.
That's exactly my point, that unless liberties come from a higher source than man, they are negotiable privileges. They're only unalienable rights if they come from God.
Excellent. www.morallaw.org for more information on the prolific John Eichmo. Thank you, John. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Talk to you later.